So let's do a quick recap of the week. We talked about the environmental issue of dog poop, which just really means pick it up. Don't let it wash down into the watershed, right? TransFitCon and immigration practices in Georgia. So as we do every Friday, we've gathered a group of really smart people to kick back, unwind, and think about what the heck happened this week. It's time for the break room.
The United States will withdraw from the Iran nuclear deal.
George Zimmerman has been charged with a misdemeanor for allegedly stalking a private investigator working on a film about Trayvon Martin.
We're from Yemen.
Oh, good. Yemen's not even on the travel ban list.
Yes, it is.
Okay, joining us in the break room. How is everyone? Everyone okay?
Yes, Tony. Happy right. Friday.
Good to see you.
Happy Friday. Let me do a proper introduction here. Freelance writer Anjali Njeti is with us. Greg Williams, host of the radio show Greg's List. Where can I hear that?
It's on americaswebradio.com.
Outstanding. Emory University's Senior Director of Marketing, Tamika DePriest, is with us and also joining us by phone due to a flight delay. He's in travel hell right now. And there's part of me that says, let's give him a break in the break room today. But the more dominant side of me is like, let's give him further hell today.
Sounds good.
That's just me. Ed Sohn is with us. He is the Vice President for Product Management and Partnerships with Thomson Reuters. Ed, how are you really?
At this point, I think I'm ready for anything. Either way.
Okay, let's get started here. The reboot of ABC's Roseanne has aired since March to big, big ratings. It tackles relevant issues, most recently Muslim panic, head on. Roseanne is concerned to learn that her new neighbors are Muslim and shows it in this clip, which gets this response from her sister, Jackie.
You can't just stand on the front porch staring at your Muslim neighbors. It's just so obvious you're spying on them.
Greg, are you enjoying the reboot?
Yeah, I am actually. And you know, if you think about it, if you go back, you know, to the 70s and 80s, a lot of our sitcoms did address social issues at the time.
Are you thinking All in the Family in particular?
I'm thinking Jeffersons. I'm thinking... you know, even the Bill Cosby show, which unfortunately that's going to live in infamy these days. Different Strokes, that addressed a lot of poignant salient issues. So I think it's great that that's kind of coming back now where we're not shying away from things, but we're looking at it in a comedic light, which I think can reach a broader audience. And you know, I've watched the clip of it last night in prep for the show, and I thought it was very well done.
Anjali, what are your thoughts? And particularly when you hear a joke like the one we just played, and I can remember watching All in the Family, and I can remember laughing at it. And I'm wondering if I watched it today, I'm sure I would. I don't know how it react to it today. I'm sure it's on TV land somewhere. But what are your thoughts on the reboot?
You know, I mean, I think the issue for me is there's such a disconnect between who Roseanne Barr is in real life and the character that she's bringing back in this show. I mean, I really liked Roseanne, the first version. I thought it was great, and it hit on a lot of issues that, you know, people in America were talking about but wasn't getting a lot of attention from the media and the entertainment industry. I was a big fan back then. But it is troubling to me that there is this disconnect. And when I was thinking about this episode, I mean, the thing that came to mind to me was, you know, she supports an administration that has issued some Islamophobic policies. So, you know, that disconnect I find troubling. I mean, when I was thinking about the reboot of this show, you know, something I would have been excited about had... you know, I not had such different ideologies compared to Roseanne's politics. What I was thinking about was, in this episode, you know, how great it would have been if we'd had a Muslim American show where we could see that humanity through Muslim American characters written by Muslim American TV writers instead of this episode where we're again seeing, you know, a white family being afraid of people that look different than them.
Yeah. Are you able to separate the Roseanne's politics from the show itself? There's the show, there's Roseanne, or do you think that the both are combined at this point?
You know, to me, they're one and the same. I mean, I don't think you can really separate art from the person. I mean, we can pretend that all we want, but, you know, she is very still influenced by who she is politically. And that is being shown in the show, no matter how sort of heartwarming the ending is.
Sure. Ed, what are your thoughts on the reboot?
You know, I don't have a lot of thoughts on the reboot. I haven't been keeping track of it or watching it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been seeing it in the news and you know, being reported on. And I think that this episode is a good example of exploring more freedom in entertainment today to actually get into some of these topics. I don't think that it needs to be, you know, the absolutely perfect nuance. Dialogue. I don't think every single opportunity to bring up one of these issues needs to be like perfectly balanced and totally represented. A lot of times it is just an expression of wanting to get an issue in the public conversation. And I applaud that in whatever form it takes.
Yeah. Tamika?
So to me, it's more of the same, but in an updated version. So what do I mean? We talked about All in the Family, and this show sort of curves to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't watch it, but also I didn't watch All in the Family, and in fact was not allowed
to watch it.
No, there were shows in my household I wasn't allowed to watch because my parents thought it reinforced stereotypes. Yes, shows brought up issues, but there weren't really structured scenarios outside of the home to kind of talk about these things and the sort of lighthearted comedic edge to it,
But now,
was not necessarily a good thing.
But the woman that you are now, you know that those issues that were talked about in a show like All in the Family were real issues in the country, and there were people saying these things for real.
Oh, absolutely.
And feeling these things and having these discussions, and, you know, George Jefferson was pushing back, right?
Right, absolutely. However, the reinforcement of stereotypes and the way in which we sort of take in media. At times, some researchers have let us know that we actually take social cues and norms from these shows. So even as we laugh, even as we talk and engage, we still don't move through a process that gets us to a point where we can eliminate that smog in our life,
if we can
think about that as pollution.
Yeah.
So
I just remember, I definitely remember laughing at a show like All in the Family and thinking to myself, oh my goodness, that's so ridiculously over the top. It's funny.
Mm-hmm.
But I take your point, Tamika. And we are back in the break room. Anjali and Jetty is with us. Greg Williams, Tamika DePriest, Ed Sohn is trying to get on a flight back to Atlanta. Let's talk about the Iran nuclear deal. President Trump has withdrawn the U.S. from the Iran nuclear deal, originally signed in the Obama presidency. It lifted economic sanctions that crippled Iran's economy if Iran agreed to limit nuclear activities. It was a central plank in Trump's campaign and a singular achievement of the Obama administration.
The United States no longer makes empty threats. When I make promises, I keep them.
So, Ed Sohn, let me start with you on this one. What are your thoughts on President Trump withdrawing the United States from this internationally negotiated deal?
Yeah, I think it's a mistake. It's hard to see it in a different light until I can understand whether or not there's a viable alternative coming out of this administration. The nature of that agreement was such that it didn't need to be retired in this fashion. It could have been built upon. It could have been revised. It could have been improved. It didn't have an expiration. It was something that had an international coalition. Iran was actually complying with it, and it was successful in rolling back major items and kind of milestones in their nuclear program, including, you know, a giant 97% of its uranium getting eliminated. I mean, it was actually working for the intended effect. I remember when it was actually sort of being brokered, and it was a watershed moment for Iran and sort of their newly elected president at the time, and really kind of opened put down a real marker for a moment of transition and change. And I think that this is just, unwinding and taking all the steps backward.
Yeah. So, Greg, this was an internationally negotiated deal. Think about the countries involved in this negotiation, the United States, of course, the UK, France, China, Russia, Germany. You get the stamp from the United Nations as well. Why did the president make this decision, you think?
Well, the treaty, if you will, was never done properly. It never went through Congress like it should have. It was unpopular at the time it went through. The only reason it survived was because of 42 Democrats employing the filibuster. So I would push back a little bit on how great it's been working. It also did have an expiration date in the mid-2020s where Iran would be able to go back to business as usual. We also rewarded them. We basically gave them their own money back that we'd seized their assets, but they've been using that to cause mischief and terrorism around the Middle East. So I think it's going to turn out to be a very good negotiating tactic. I think Trump is not playing 4D chess like some of his defenders will say, but I think him being unpredictable is actually a good thing because these other countries now have to realize that there is a new sheriff in town. The uninstallation of Obama is 72% complete, and we're hitting a reset on a lot of our previous deals that maybe weren't working out for us.
Dismantling the Obama legacy, is that the goal of this presidency?
I mean, he ran on several of these issues. It's funny that he's getting a little bit of pushback because he's doing the things he campaigned on. It's such a rare thing for a politician to do.
Is the good being held hostage to the perfect?
Of course. The perfect is the enemy of the good, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Anjali, your thoughts on the president's decision?
You know, Tony, I find this frightening. I mean, I'm trying to envision a scenario where we don't go to war with Iran. This kind of undermines, you know, what all of these countries have been working toward. And, you know, I think that the ultimate price is going to be paid by thousands of Iranian civilians, innocent Iranian civilians. So I'm pretty terrified about
it. Do you believe that in some way, shape, or form, the other countries that I mentioned who are signatories to this deal will figure out a way to keep it in place? Or does the deal fall apart when the U.S. imposes additional sanctions on the Iranian regime?
You know, I don't know what the other countries are going to be able to do. However, I think it really undermines the credibility of the United States with those countries. You know, they needed our support, and we did give it for a very long time. So, you know, I'm not sure that all these other countries feel like they can rely on us, you know, for support.
Tamika, how about you? What are your thoughts on this?
I'm also concerned about this, you know, leading to war. I'm also concerned about our relationship with those who have actually been strong partners with us. And I am actually hoping that other countries can work behind the scenes, to do something to.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Make some. I don't know. I'm so confused about what's happening coming out of this presidency.
I think there's a dilemma as to how much Iran was actually paying attention to the deal. The Israelis came out and showed certain levels of proof that they were not exactly abiding by it. I think we've got a lot of proof that they're in Syria and Yemen and several other countries attacking some of our troops. So I would argue.
But the Israelis have always been against the deal.
Of course. Well, Iran has said we want to wipe Israel from the face of the map. So they're going to have a little bit of a bone to pick anytime it looks like we're strengthening the regime. And when we bail them out by giving them a lot of their seized assets back, didn't that make the regime have a little bit more lasting effect? You know, if our goal is regime change.
So all of the countries that were involved in the negotiations on this are wrong, right?
A lot of them had financial interests in it, that they were getting trade deals out of it. And I think that it's an opportunity for us to be able to go back to the drawing board and get it run through Congress. If Donald Trump's biggest contribution during his 4-8 year presidency, or less or more, who knows? Well, it won't be more than 8, but could be less. If his biggest contribution is bringing back normal order, where things actually go through Congress rather than living by executive order.
Normal order.
Okay. Then that's going to be, because he has rescinded a lot of the executive orders and he hasn't been pushing through major policies on his own. And he's been trying to go through Congress, and that is the normal order that this country should be. It's the checks and balances system, and if that's his contribution, that'll be a very significant one.
Which would lead
Go ahead. Just one comment on this.
Sure.
If we're relying on Congress to pass a new nuclear deal with Iran, then we will see a nuclear Iran. That to me feels a much more likely outcome than the direction it was going. I understand the kind of foreign policy strategism, you know, around Syria, and there's a lot of complexity there, and I totally, you know, give credit to that, but it didn't require the unwinding of an Iran that was denuclearizing to accomplish some of those goals.
Moving on now. Last Saturday, and I'm still trying to figure this video out. I think it'll take...
Don't catch you slipping now.
Yeah.
Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping now.
So that's Donald Glover, a.k.a. Childish Gambino. This is America. So the music video is full of symbols and shocks, right? And just surprises, and it's in your face. They range from Childish Gambino mowing down an entire choir with a machine gun, right? To dancing with school children while all kinds of mayhem is happening behind them, maybe making the point that while we're focused on entertainment, there are real life consequences happening in people's lives all over the country. I don't know. It's going to take me a while to figure this out. Tamika, what are your thoughts on the video?
I mean, each time I watch it, I see something that I haven't seen before. And it's definitely a statement on gun violence. I think it's also a statement in terms of sort of our children and not only what they're experiencing, but sort of what they're learning in a very violent, chaotic, and I think in this video, mindless, because you have people running through rioting. I mean, it's just all kinds of scenarios, and they all seem to connect back to violence in America, which some say is as American as apple pie.
Anjali, when you saw this video, what were your first reactions to it?
You know, I thought it was really profound, and I thought it was beautifully done. I would say my primary reaction, though, is that what are white and non-black people of color going to do now that they've seen this video? I mean, you know, there's all these think pieces going around online. People are talking about it at the water cooler. Is this going to be another example where we watch a viral video of violence against black people and white and non-black people of color don't really do anything about it?
Well,
I mean, we consume
it. Why won't it be that? I mean, the news cycle is moving so quickly now. Why won't it be something that dropped on Saturday and maybe we talk about it for a week? That would be a long time in the news cycle and we move on.
It would be. But I mean, I just, you know, it bothers me that, you know, people who are not black consume these narratives, you know, enjoy it. It's entertainment. And then we don't do anything about it. We're not... You know, we need to do something about it. I mean, and we've seen the real videos, right, of
what's
viral
the do
violence.
Something about it?
You know, get involved. Talk to people in your community. Go to your politicians and say, hey, we've got to do something about bias in our communities. Talk to, you know, your law enforcement, city council, mayor. It can be done at a very local level. Ally yourself with Black Lives Matter or other organizations working for racial justice. But we've become the society where, you know, we see violence against the Black community and really only take it in as entertainment. And there's got to be some action behind it.
Well, that's clearly one of the messages.
Oh, absolutely.
That's
yeah.
Clearly one of the messages
in
the video.
I just hope it happens. I mean, you know, we've got the tools. It's just a matter of whether we carry it out and do something with it.
Ed, what was your reaction when you saw the video for the first time?
Totally stunned. I thought that it, you know, Donald Glover's one of the sort of kind of brilliant young minds in art and entertainment today. I do think that, you know, I agree with the sentiment that we need to respond and that it's evocative as a work and it should evoke, you know, further response. I would love to see more artistic response. I don't think that art by itself is, you know, without sort of political action and fruit, is meaningless. I think that there is a massive sort of movement that could trigger. I think that young people watching something like this and kind of understanding it from a meta level, understanding that somebody decided to make something like this, would encourage others to make something like that too. And I think that there is a lot of political speech and expression and, you know, influence into our culture and into our way of thinking and our way of being educated and discussing and viewing issues in today's world when it's expressed in creative ways. I hope that it creates a watershed movement because I agree that one music video could drop on Saturday and be forgotten a week later. But, you know, 50 music videos that credits that music video or pieces of art or, you know, op-eds or poems or what have you that sprout out from that from inspiration, I think could be a really powerful thing.
and connecting to movements and activities that are happening now that are aligned toward addressing this. As there's actually a lot of community organizing and activity happening right now. If you think about Black Lives Matter, if you think about, you know, there's so many organizations, NAACP. I'm not going to go down the list, but there are lots of organizations, ACLU, there are lots of organizations that have activities and movements to address some of the things that have come up in that video. But I think it's to our panelists' point, what are other communities going to do, or how will other communities join into that movement that's taking place?
Mm-hmm. Which brings us to Greg, our white male on the panel in studio this morning. Not to put too fine a point on it.
Token. Well, you know, I had the, you know, fortunately I was able to watch it before reading the comment section and before really reading
it
was a great move because I watched it. I found it provocative. And then I started reading some of the comments, and the people were complaining about his dance moves. And I was thinking that was a self-fulfilling prophecy. You're missing the larger point, my friends. And the fact that that became a talking point on this video, that clearly that was shows, you know, when you have the shiny obelisk, hey, look over here, you're trying to distract from what's really going on in the background. But I was able to focus on the background the whole time. And, you know, there is a real good chance that this will be a viral sensation and disappear within a few months.
Though. I think so. And yeah. I'm sorry to say that. I'm sorry to say that. I'm wondering where the good music, the inspirational music, the provocative music out of this moment in time, right? Who are the artists good. Producing that music? And maybe this is a start.
Tony, you may be right, because when I saw it, it harkened me back to that era of hip hop that sort of shaped my coming of age, which was Public Enemy, mm-hmm. KRS-One, X-Clan, these artists that basically were really had a high level of consciousness
and they moved you.
As artists, and they moved us. So maybe this is the beginning of the floodgate.
Okay, more music. Ready? Last one. Taylor Swift announced the end of her longtime feud with pop singer and rival, can I say that, Katy Perry. She decided it would be poetic to send her a literal olive wreath with a note, as in she's extending the olive branch. So help me here. Was it Katy Perry who sent the peace offering, or was it Taylor Swift who? I think it was Katy Perry.
It was Katy.
Okay. So, Tamika, your thoughts on this? Do you have any deep thoughts on the end of this rivalry?
I'm smiling because I thought it was pretty cute for her to send the olive branch and the note, especially since Taylor, you know, her point of view was she started it. And so I thought it was a good ending. I think it lasted too long. But what's funny is we had these sort of two pop stars, you know, having this fallout. I'm used to that in hip hop.
Biggie versus Tupac. This is certainly not Biggie versus Tupac. Was it? I think it's interesting we juxtapose from going to something very heavy to now cotton candy pop music.
Because it's Friday in the break room.
Frenemies. We've got to head into Friday night in a good mood, right?
I'm
glad we have Pax Romana between Taylor and Katie.
Seriously. I mean, I feel really bad for celebrities because every little tiff between them, every argument, every slight is magnified about a million times.
You're the
online.
Only one in the room. You feel bad for celebrities.
I'm not even a fan of Katy Perry or Taylor Swift. Don't tell my kids that. But I mean, it's like everything is exacerbated so much by how much people talk about. I mean, you can't just have a good old fashioned argument and just let it go.
But
right?
Theirs lasted for years.
Right.
Theirs lasted for years.
It did, right? So I mean, I do have a little sympathy.
And Ed, jump in here.
The only thing I got to say is that I follow Taylor Swift on Instagram. So, look, you know, everything being broadcast across the social media channels and stuff, that's I'm a willing consumer and participant in that.
Well, tell us why they keep picking on her. Perfect. Why do they keep picking on her?
No, we don't have time for that. Thank you all so much. That's our break room. And thanks to our guests, Anjali and Jeanette, Greg Williams, Tamika DePriest, and Ed Sohn. And Ed, get home soon and safely. That's our show for today, but we always want to hear from you. We talked in the break room about Childish Gambino's new music video, This Is America. What do you think? Give us a call at 404-500-9457. This is On Second Thought. I'm Tony Harris. Have a great weekend.